Most people think search and rescue is all adrenaline and helicopters. Truth is, 90% of the job is boredom. Checking radios, restocking gear, driving home because the missing hiker showed up at a gas station before we even laced our boots. I signed up as a volunteer after moving back home. I figured it was a good way to give back and maybe feel useful again. Our SAR unit covers a massive stretch of mountain forest, crags, old trails, floodplains, abandoned logging roads. Beautiful if you're just hiking it, deadly if you get stuck overnight. We're based out of a small depot near the ranger station. It's mostly paid staff. The volunteers, like me, are floaters, filling gaps when numbers get low or terrain's too rough to cover fast. They pair us up. There's always one experienced with one volunteer. My guess is that we don't cause another rescue while out in tricky conditions. We got an alert at 4:17 p.m. A heavy winter storm was rolling in fast, soon to slam the region with snow, wind, and zero visibility. Multiple hikers had reported seeing a little girl in a red coat near the ridge trail, wandering alone, no adult in sight. No one knew where she came from. No reports of a missing child matched the description. The sheriff's office kicked it to SAR immediately. When I checked in, I prayed to be paired with anyone except Riker, the oldest guy there by at least 2 decades. He looked like someone who had carved a man out of rawhide and bad memories, talked less than anyone, and was apparently a nightmare to work with. And my timing must have been divinely unlucky, because he was the only senior left for me to partner with. We gathered gear from the supply trailer. Radios, thermals, maps, flares. As I clipped on my headlamp, Riker handed me something I hadn't seen anyone else use. A brass whistle, worn smooth from years of handling. "Only use it if you get turned around," he said, voice low. "And only head toward the returning whistle," he added, brandishing his own whistle that he had tied around his wrist. I studied it. "What else would there be to head towards?" I asked. He paused, looked up at me for the first time. "If you hear another whistle," he said, "just follow the sound, never the voice." He never elaborated and walked off, adjusting his pack. That stuck with me more than it should have. The storm hadn't broken yet, but the air was dense with it, like something holding its breath. The light was already going grey, bleeding out behind the thickening clouds as our team leader handed out the search grids. Most units were assigned to the western trailheads, where hikers might have had a better chance of surviving a cold night. But when my name was called and I saw I was with Riker, he spoke up before I could even step forward. "We'll take grid E." That wasn't where the girl was last seen. It wasn't even near the usual trails. But no one argued. Riker had seniority, a lot of respect, even if he never talked much. We geared up with thermal layers, waterproof jackets, radios, headlamps, and GPS. I carried a PLB in case of signal failure, a map, and a digital compass with storm calibration. Riker didn't bring a map. He never did. They loaded us into snowmobiles and trucks, then split us into grid pairs along the ridge's perimeter. By the time Riker and I got to our drop point, grid 3E, the sun had already dipped, and the tree line looked like a black mouth yawning open. Riker said nothing, just clicked on his light and stepped into the woods. I followed. Behind us, the last trace of daylight vanished. Ahead, the trees and frost. And somewhere out there, a little girl who wasn't supposed to be here. As we entered the tree line, The wind shifted hard, snapping across the branches like warning cracks. The dirt trail dissolved quickly into rock and deadfall. I marked our position with orange flagging tape every 30 meters. Visibility dropped. Fog didn't roll in, so much as rise from the earth like steam, curling around our ankles and thighs. "This grid's a mess," I said, trying to sound casual. "You really think she came this way?" "Not recently," Riker muttered. "But she always circles east eventually." That stuck with me. I almost asked what he meant, but he was already moving again. The forest was loud in a strange way. Riker seemed more distracted with every step. He'd stop sometimes, turn his head slightly, and just listen, like the woods might say something if he were patient enough. I called it in, our location, pace, visibility. I kept logging timestamps on our GPS to make sure we could double back. But something about the terrain felt slippery, like we were always veering a few degrees off course. After half an hour, Riker finally spoke again. "What would you do," he said, "if you found her and she asked for help?" "What do you mean?" "If she was scared, bleeding, looked you in the eyes and asked you to take a hand. Would you?" I thought he was joking. "Yeah," I said. "That's literally why we're out here." But he didn't laugh it off, just kept moving. I started watching him a little closer, keeping mental track of how he walked too quietly, how he didn't react to the wind chill like I did, how his boots never left deep prints, even in the soft moss. I was about to ask how long we'd stay out before heading back, when we both stopped. There was a voice farther in. "Hello?" No crunch of movement, just that one word drifting out from deeper in the woods. We scanned the direction, our headlamps flickering across tree trunks slick with mist. Then Riker pointed. At eye level, snagged on a broken limb of pine sapling, was a mitten. Red, small and woolen. It was too bright and clean. The storm had already dusted the trees with frost and debris, but the mitten was untouched, fresh, as if someone had just placed it there. Riker silently stepped forward, ducking under the limb. I followed, but the unease I'd felt earlier had crawled up into my throat now. It wasn't the storm that scared me. It was the idea that maybe Riker wasn't looking for the girl at all. We kept moving. The ground beneath us began to angle upward into a slow but constant incline that turned our boots into dead weight. My thighs burned, breath fogging in tight bursts. The wind had picked up, pushing sideways now, sharp enough to sting the skin. Snow had begun falling in dry, whispering flakes, collecting in the folds of my hood and glove seams. The radio crackled uselessly every few minutes. Too much interference. We hadn't heard from base since the first mile. Visibility dropped to maybe 30 feet. Trees loomed closer together, their bark slick with wet. My map showed we were near the ridge line, but nothing about the place felt right. I kept one hand on the compass, watching it twitch like a dying insect. Then, Riker stopped. He raised a hand silently. There, just beyond a thicket of bare brush and frost-laced undergrowth, a small figure stood between two trees, red coat, hood up. She was facing us, watching. Even in the snow-dimmed light, I could see how bright the coat was, clean and untouched, like it had never brushed a single branch or patch of mud. She didn't even look hurt or scared. I lifted the radio, but Riker grabbed my wrist gently before I could press the call button. "Don't," he whispered. "What?" "Don't engage. Let her go." I stared at him, trying to read his face, but he was as blank as the tree line. "That's what we're out here for," I said, stepping forward. "She's not alone," he said. "You follow her, you'll find out what she's with." I hesitated. I told myself he was just being paranoid, that maybe all these years in the woods had made him see ghosts where there were none. It was just a scared girl, maybe in shock. That's why she wasn't crying, why she didn't move. I stepped past the thicket, ducking through brittle branches. My boots crunched loudly, and the sound made her head tilt slightly. And then, she moved. She turned and walked. She weaved between trees, red coat flickering between trunks like a thread being pulled. I followed, and just before she slipped behind a thicker cluster of pines, she turned her head and smiled, like she knew something I didn't. I kept pushing forward, but she kept slipping away. Every time I thought I'd close the gap, she'd dart behind another tree or vanish behind a cluster of brush. She never ran, just moved fast enough to stay out of reach. I contemplated why she was moving away from me, geared with the familiar colors of search and rescue in the beginnings of a heavy storm. The only reasonable explanation would be that she was leading me to someone who she came with, a parent or guardian stuck somewhere nearby. This only added urgency to the situation. The snow fell harder now. My boots punched through crust and sank into the earth beneath. Wind howled through the pines, giving the illusion of voices, cries that almost resolved into words, then vanished again. My radio was hissing with static. I thumbed the call button anyway. "Riker, I'm tracking her. She's moving east-northeast. I'm going to try and..." The signal cracked, and then dropped entirely. Dead. I stopped for a moment, fighting the urge to panic. I wasn't trained for solo tracking, and if something went wrong now, there'd be no one to triangulate my location. But I'd just seen her, clear as day. If she were injured, confused, or worse, I couldn't just turn around. And I didn't want to come back and admit I left a child to die alone in the cold. So, I pressed on. The trees closed in tighter, visibility dipped again, my breath came in hitches now. Then, she was gone. I turned in a slow circle, scanning for movement. Nothing. I checked the ground, but there were no prints. The air went still, no wind or sound. I reached for the whistle Riker had given me and raised it to my lips. One sharp blast. The sound bounced through the woods and vanished. I waited. Then, an answer. Same pitch, same duration. I exhaled in relief. Riker must have heard me. He'd be coming now. But then, before I could call again, a voice followed the whistle. It wasn't Riker's. A soft, lifting voice, clear as day, floated through the trees. "Hello?" It was her. I froze. My brain scrambled to rationalize it. What if I hadn't lost her, but she lost me, guiding me to somewhere that needed my attention? I thought about the direction of each sound, The returning whistle came from behind, where I could only assume Riker was. But the voice was from ahead, roughly the way I was being led. If she answered, she was close. I had to reach her, and if Riker had heard me, he'd be heading my way anyway. He'd know the grid pattern. He'd catch up. So, I turned toward the voice and moved, carefully but quickly. My compass needle spun once, then stuck. But I pushed forward. The slope changed underfoot, the snow deepened, the trees grew denser. Limbs gnarled and reaching, some wrapped with vines I swore hadn't been there minutes ago. I passed under a natural arch of branches and realized I no longer recognized the landscape. Completely lost. And then, I saw her. A break in the trees revealed a shallow clearing. The girl in the red coat stood in the middle, hands at her sides, waiting. But she wasn't alone. Behind her, something tall and grey loomed, still as a statue. At first, I thought it was the shade of a tree. But then it blinked. Its face was wrong, not shaped for eyes, not made for looking. But it had seen me. And the girl smiled again. For a heartbeat, none of us moved. The girl in the red coat stood perfectly still in the clearing, her boots planted neatly together, her chin slightly lifted, waiting, almost politely. But the thing behind her, that's what froze my breath in my throat. It was hunched low to the ground, long-limbed like a starving animal, its joints bent at angles that shouldn't exist. Its skin was smooth, sickly grey, stretched too thin, like wet paper over sticks. Head tilted in my direction, as though it was sizing me up. It didn't move, not an inch. But the girl did. She turned a little toward me. And then, she spoke. "Help me, it's so cold." Her voice was soft, warm, and disturbingly calm. But her mouth didn't open, not even a twitch. The words just slipped into the air between us, as though the space itself had spoken them. The thing behind her shifted, only a tremor, like something contracting unseen muscles. "Looks like you'll be the next one," she said. Although I couldn't make sense of it, my stomach dropped so hard, my knees almost went with it. Then it started slinking toward me. That was when I realized the girl wasn't separate. She wasn't herself. They were both sides of the same coin. She was a lure, a mask, something the creature used to draw people in. And the creature, the real creature, was the thing behind her, the horrifying mass watching me, breathing without lungs, speaking without a voice. My heart thundered against my ribs. I stumbled backward, boots slipping in the snow. My throat tightened, but I couldn't scream. Panic rose so sharp, it felt like electricity. All I could think was, "Get out." I turned and ran. Branches slapped my arms, my breath tore out of me in sharp bursts. The trees blurred and twisted around me as I sprinted, not caring where I was going, just away. Away from that thing, away from its voice inside my head, away from the smile on a face that shouldn't exist. But the forest didn't cooperate. Every direction looped back in on itself. No matter which angle I turned, I hit the same gnarled birch, The same rotten stump, the same fork in the path. It was like the woods were squeezing me inward, nudging me back toward the clearing. Every shadow felt too close, every creak of a branch sounded like a step. And then, a wet, scraping sound behind me, fast, getting closer. I stumbled, hitting my knee hard on a root. I twisted around. The girl stood 5 feet away, head tilted. Behind her, the creature unfolded itself, rising taller, too tall, its limbs uncoiling like ropes soaked in oil. It reached toward me. A hand, if you could call it that, stretched out, fingers like brittle twigs. I froze in absolute terror as it neared inches away from me. Then, something slammed into me from the side. An arm hooked around my chest, a hand clamped over my mouth. I didn't even have time to react. My body was hauled backward into the brush as the creature's reach sliced through the space where my face had been. My head hit earth, breath knocked out of me. I thrashed instinctively until I heard a voice in my ear. Quiet. Riker. He dragged me behind a fallen log, keeping one hand over my mouth and the other gripping something. Maybe a knife, maybe a tool. I didn't know. My vision blurred with panic. I couldn't speak, breathe right, or think. Everything was shaking. The creature moved into the clearing, searching, a shape shifting in the dark, its blank head tilted, listening. I barely understood what happened next. I heard a crack of something. Metal hitting wood, Riker pushing dirt, a distraction thrown. It was a scuffle too fast and quiet for my panicked mind to track. But it worked. The creature moved away, its long limbs folding into the trees, melting into the darkness without sound. Riker didn't let me move until a full minute of silence passed. Only then did he whisper, voice shaky in a way I'd never heard from him. Don't ever let it near you again. We tumbled down an embankment, sliding through frost-hardened leaves and loose mud, until we crashed through a curtain of pine boughs and into a hollowed-out shelter. It wasn't natural. Canvas blended with dirt, old brush stacked to hide its outline. Inside, it was just tall enough to crouch. A rusted lantern burned low, supplies lined the corners, flares, cans of food, torn maps with years of notes etched in red ink. Riker shoved the flap closed and pressed a hand to my chest to keep me still. I could feel his heartbeat pounding through his gloves. You okay? He finally asked. I couldn't speak. I just nodded. He looked me over, then let out a breath that shook more than it should have. He sat, leaned back, and wiped a hand down his face. In the flickering lantern light, he looked older than I realized, worn out from a hard life. You saw it, he said. The girl. I nodded again. He gave a dry, humorless chuckle. She gets better at pretending every year. I swallowed. What is it? He didn't answer right away. Instead, he opened a thermos and poured 2 small cups of black coffee. I took mine with shaking hands. It waits, he said, finally. Out there, in that tree line. I've never found any information on it. I don't know what the hell to call it. But it takes the shape of something innocent, I said. He looked at me. She's not innocent, though. Anything but. She's bait. It lures with hope. The kind of hope only a good person would follow. He tapped his chest. You chased because you thought she was real, because you cared. He leaned forward now, eyes wet, voice tight. That's why I joined Search and Rescue. That's why we all do it. Because we want to help. And it knows that. It waits for people like us. I remembered her smile, the way it hadn't reached her eyes, and the thing standing behind her. How it didn't speak, but I heard it. I heard a voice in my head, I whispered, but it wasn't her talking. Riker nodded slowly. She's not real, a rubber worm on the end of a fishhook, showing whatever it is you need to see so it can hook you in. I thought about this. If there were reports of an injured animal or something menial, it'd be pushed off until after the storm. But the reports were perfect to get a whole team sent out, a plethora of victims to choose from. But this also raised more questions. What does it want? What happens if it catches you? I asked. Riker paused, thinking of the best way to word his response. It wasn't always a girl. When I first saw it, it was a nice old man. We were on a family trip. I was showing my family the world. All it took was one touch. It marks you, curses you, once you're tagged. You belong to it. There was something hollow in his voice. He was cryptic, but I started piecing it together. Having calmed down somewhat, I looked around the bunker again. The maps, the supplies. This wasn't a rescue cache. This was a hunting blind. A war room. You've been tracking it, I said. For years, he said, before you were ever brought in. He laughed again, but not humor. Darker. I've seen others go missing. I've tried marking its movements, testing how it chooses. I even tried baiting it once. He didn't elaborate. I didn't ask. He stared into the corner like it held answers he hadn't found. I'm slowing down, he admitted. I don't move like I used to. Vision's worse. Hands shake sometimes. You know how many years I've prepped this place, how many storms I've waded through, hoping I'd find a weakness. He looked at me then, really looked at me. You know, he said, staring at the dirt floor, I once heard her say something to me. I looked up. What? He swallowed. I forgive you. The words lingered in the stale air like a breath on cold glass. I've been trying to figure out what I'm being forgiven for ever since, he said. I don't think she meant it. But God, it almost sounded sincere. I watched him, unsure if I should respond. He seemed lost in the memory, haunted by something only he'd witnessed. Then he straightened up, decisively, and reached under a tarp in the corner. He pulled out a weapon. A compact rifle, lovingly maintained, its barrel wrapped in cloth to keep the cold from seizing the metal. My chest tightened. What are you doing? Riker lifted the gun, checked the chamber, and nodded to himself. This is the best chance I've had in years, he said. Storms covering movement. It hunts better in clear air. You're not going out there, I said. You can barely... He rolled up his sleeve. And my words died. His forearm was pale as candle wax, mottled with deep blue patches. Streaks of white frostbite spidered beneath the skin. But worse... at the center of it were the clear impressions of fingers curved inward like hooks, a perfect handprint. "I'm already gone," Riker said. "Marked. It touched me when I hauled you out of the clearing." My stomach dropped. "Riker, you didn't feel it. That's good." He breathed out a shaky but relieved sound. "Maybe you'll last longer than I did." "I'm not letting you go alone," I said, rising to my feet. "We can radio in help. Call the state. Call..." "There's no one left to call." He actually smiled at that. A real smile. The first I'd seen from him. A small, sad thing. "You think I haven't tried?" he said. "I've done this longer than you've been shaving. I've chased it for years, hoping I'd find a loophole, a weakness, a pattern." His hand tightened on the rifle. "I never did. But if I'm going to die anyway..." He shrugged. "Might as well go out swinging. It's the best excuse I've ever had." "Riker, please." My throat was tight, a knot of guilt, helplessness, and something like grief twisted inside me. This man had saved my life, and it had cost him his. And now he was walking into the dark to pay the rest of the price alone. He put a hand on my shoulder. "Stay here. No matter what you hear, when the storm breaks, wait for the team. Walk out when the sun's up. Don't run. And don't follow her." He pulled the flap open. The cold wind slapped my face. And then he stepped out into the black. I scrambled toward the exit. "Riker!" But the flap dropped shut. For a moment, there was only the roar of the storm. Then, a gunshot, sharp, echoing. Another. Then a scream, raw, torn from someone who had no hope of surviving what they were facing. And then, silence. The storm swallowed everything. To honor Riker, I did as I was told. I stayed in the shelter. Hours passed, the lantern dimmed, my breath fogged in the cold. But I had time to look around, see what he'd really been doing. There were notes everywhere, wrapped in protective film to stop the elements at eating the pages. Notes on locations, hot and cold areas of sightings, unexplained disappearances. It was a clinical detail, a facsimile of the way he presented himself. However, like I had witnessed, something no one else in the SAR team had seen besides me. I found his heart. Something so dear that I could almost feel it beating in my hand. A small square that told a biblical-sized story. A worn-out Polaroid of a happy family with a snowy backdrop. Riker, young and full of energy, surrounded by love. And between him and his partner, a joyous little girl in a red coat. It must have been taken not long before she was taken, absorbed by the thing that became his obsession, an incident that turned his story from growth to loss. Riker never came back. When the blizzard eased at dawn, I crawled out of the bunker, half expecting to see him slumped outside. But there was nothing. Only one thing sat in the mud, untouched by snow. His old brass whistle. They found me in the early morning, slumped against a pine stump with my radio dead and my coat soaked through. I don't remember what I said, just that I was cold disoriented and alone. Search and rescue huddled around, full of panicked questions and relief. I told them Riker and I got separated in the storm. I tried to keep to the trail. I must have tripped, lost my bearings, fell down a slope. I don't remember. They didn't press further. Riker's absence said enough. I took a break from SAR after that, said I needed time. They didn't argue. For a while, I tried to live normal, sleep, work, pretend. But every creak outside made my breath hitch. I started watching the tree line through my window, started keeping a flashlight next to my bed, started waking up with a sense that someone had just left the room. A month passed, then two. But I couldn't stay away. It felt like a compulsion. I signed back up. Some of the same faces were still around. Carl, Dana, the captain. But a lot of new ones too. College kids, drifters, hopefuls. I kept to myself, did the refreshers course, passed the new field drills. I didn't talk about Riker. Then, one evening during gear check, the call came in. A hiker had reported seeing someone limping near Deer Hollow Trail. Male, mid-40s, walking with a pronounced drag like an injury. Every time they got close, he slipped out of view. The report said he kept looking back, but never called out. Bad weather was coming in overnight, too cold for someone to be wandering alone, injured. We were mobilized. They split us into search grids. I was assigned west, just like before, but talked them into letting me go east, just like before. They were confused by this, but still unsure of how to handle me, so let me do my own thing. My partner this time was Lucy. New girl, nervous energy but capable. Didn't talk much, which suited me fine. We hiked through thick frost and bramble, radios crackling as the wind picked up. Snow was coming fast, the air already sharp enough to bite. Then, just like before, a voice cut through the woods. "Hey, is someone there?" My feet froze in place. It was Riker's voice. "Hey, I'm hurt. Need a hand over here." Lucy perked up. "That must be him." But the tone was wrong. The urgency too measured, too performative compared to the reserved way Riker always presented himself. I turned slowly. Between the trees, maybe 30 feet out, I saw him, or the thing wearing him. Just the edge of a figure, half hidden behind a birch, head down, coat torn at the shoulder, like he wanted me to come closer, like he didn't think I'd learned. Lucy started forward. I grabbed her arm hard. "Don't." She looked at me. "But he's..." "He's not. Not anymore." Lucy shook me off. "What the hell are you talking about?" I didn't answer. My hand instinctively went to my coat pocket, felt the weight there. The whistle. A minute passed, then another. The figure stayed still. Too still. Seemed the fisherman didn't want to scare the fish away by tugging the string too much. I turned back to Lucy. "Come on, we're heading back." She started to protest again, but I spoke before she could. "Storm's coming in fast. Anyone in that condition wouldn't have made it this far without shelter. If he's real, he's already dead." I don't know if she bought it. Doesn't matter. She followed. We regrouped with the team. I made my report, referred to the snow, the wind, the lack of tracks. I said it didn't match up. I said we need better weather, infrared, and maybe a drone sweep in the morning. They logged it, called off the search until the storm passed. Back at base, I stowed my gear. Then I went to the locker room. There, in my personal bag, beneath a medical pouch and my backup radio, was the thing I hadn't dared carry until now. A firearm. Riker's old sidearm. I'd found it hidden in the bunker after the storm passed, along with his journal, his maps, his mission. I signed back up for search and rescue because it was what I knew. But I stayed because it was what I had to do. I don't know if the creature can be killed, but I can try. I know Riker tried. And now, it's my turn.